FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 163, recorded Friday, August 7th, 2015. I am Duron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Headmaster Dawn.
Hey.
Jim Black.
Rubbing myself to reveal my allegiance.
Da-da-da-da-da. I was wondering why that was there. I'm like, why does he have a black Decepticon insignia on his chest?
Right?
Yes. And also joining us is Rick Alvarez.
Yes. Yes, I am this handsome. Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
And so modest.
I actually didn't even shave this for the episode. Wow.
That's I never some do that. Hand.
Yes. Some of you may be tuning in and you may not have noticed, but we did advertise that Paul Eiding, the voice of G1 Perceptor, would be joining us this evening. There are some unforeseen things that came up. He is doing a rendition of Midsummer Night's Dream tonight. He had to stand in for someone and could not make it tonight. But we have rescheduled with him for September 4th. At 9 p.m. on this show on our YouTube channel, and also will be available for download later via iTunes and Stitcher and other outlets. Be sure to look for that. But we do apologize; he's not going to be with us tonight. But tune back in September 4th for that episode with Paul Eiding. But that doesn't mean we want you to tune off tonight, because we got some great stuff we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to be talking about the gimmicks that have appeared in the Transformers franchise throughout the years. Tonight's episode is entitled From Rub Signs to Scan Codes, The Gimmicks of Transformers. Transformers has been rife with gimmicks throughout, and right now one of the main lines is centered, actually, around a gimmick. And this is the Jazz figure, and you might notice a little scan code right there if you're watching the show. He has a scan code on him that you can scan with your cell phone. You scan it, and makes him a playable character in a video game. It's a neat little little feature, and it all started with the actual gimmick of transforming. You know, we got a blue-eared Cyclonus here. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Also, want to do a little segment here. Going to kick things off. Those of you who follow us on our Twitter account, at TFYLP, we monitor that during the show. And if you tweet us anything that is relevant to the show, what we're talking about, we may mention you on air and mention your comment on air. And we may talk about it. But one of the things I've been wanting to do is and I have been doing for the last week or so, is once a day, at least once a day, sometimes a couple times a day, but usually once a day, I'll pose a question and just see what listeners have in response. And I want to highlight some of those, and we'll talk a little bit about them here before we move on and just get our knee-jerk reactions to them. Let me scroll down here. Tonight, I want to ask the question. Our topic will be gimmicks of Transformers throughout the years. Which gimmicks do you love? Which gimmicks do you hate? Let us know. We'd love to find out from you, and if it's relevant to the show, we'll mention it on air.
Do you want to just clarify what exactly constitutes a gimmick?
Well, okay. The transforming itself is a gimmick, but we want to specifically talk about things like headmasters. You know, the act of actual gimmick of taking the head off and it becoming like a little guy that rides or trains or drives a vehicle. That's a gimmick. For example, I've got Beast Wars Neo Stampy here. His gimmick, yeah, he turns into a gun or a pair of scissors, but they've also got like the spark crystal there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a gimmick. He's kind of got like two different kind of gimmicks. You know, the scan codes, like I mentioned on the RID 2015 figures. Those are examples of gimmicks, light piping, firing missiles, things of that nature. So if you have anything that you absolutely love, we'd love to hear about it. If there are things that you absolutely hate, why did they do that? Why do they continue to do that? Let's hear about it. You know, this is your forum, as a fan, and we want to talk about it. That's what we're here for. Earlier this week, I posed a question, and this is a little bit off topic of what we're talking about, but let's see here. Let me find the original question. Let's see. I had it pulled up here, and then the screen jumped on me. Okay. How would you feel if an upcoming Transformers line from Hasbro were an updated version of Japanese characters like Star Saber or Death Source? Let's say, for example, and a lot of people, I had to clarify this a little bit later on, because I'm not sure people was like, well, it's you know, it wouldn't work here in the U.S. because they're Japanese characters, people wouldn't relate to it. That's not what I mean at all. Let's say instead of the RID 2015 show, we got a show that had Star Saber, Death Saurus, Lyo Kaiser, you know, all those characters in it. And they look like they're G1 cells, but it was a more westernized cartoon or TV show. You know, it might be CGI, what have you.
Yeah, well, that's a huge question.
It is a huge question.
You're really asking at that point, can the brand survive without its core characters? Without its tier A characters?
But does it even have to be the main line? For example, right now we have Combiner Wars and RID 2.0 or 2015, whatever you want to refer to it. It could be the B line. You know, it doesn't have to have the core characters. This particular show doesn't have, and what made me think about it is kind of, combining what the fans have been asking for. You know, we've asked for years for characters like Star Saber, like Death Saurus, to be introduced, reissued, what have you, here in the United States, so that we can get them here, on this side of the pond, as opposed to, you know, the Japanese characters staying over there in Japan, and we never getting the love.
So those characters. So you're only talking about animation.
Well, not necessarily animation. I mean, it could be comic characters. Now, I know Star Saber has
talking about comic books because
I know Star Saber has appeared in the comics, mm-hmm. but as a central character, for example, the 2015 RID line, Optimus Prime is not. I mean, he has appeared. He's in a few episodes. But he is not the central character. He's not the leader of the Autobots, per se. Bumblebee.
No, but he's one of the central price points.
He is.
Of the toy line.
He is. And let's say Star Convoy. Bring Star Convoy over, a rendition of him, update him, you know, give us like a generation Star Convoy or something. Have him like the star, the main price point, but have other characters that surround that line. You know, I mean, you basically have a show that is westernized, and you have Japanese characters. That way, you have new characters for the kiddos. The kiddos don't know who these characters are. You know, I don't know who Gregor is. I didn't know who Strong Arm is, but she's a new character. It'd be the same to the kids with Star Saber or Death Source, for example. But on the other hand, you would also be drawing in the collector market because, ooh, that's a new version of Star Saber. That's a new version of Death Source.
It's a homage to Energon Wing Saber.
Exactly. You know, I mean, just something like that. Well, I posed that question on Twitter, and Crimson Raptor tweeted, I'd view an upcoming Transformers toy line by Hasbro with Japan-only characters as unviable in the U.S. market. And then that was before I clarified, well, what if you, you know, made it as if you westernized it? And let's see here.
So it's really no different than taking a show, let's say Transformers Animated, and mm-hmm. adding a character like Bulkhead. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew who Bulkhead was.
Exactly.
But he had such personality and was so well written that he's a staple now of Transformers. And he's now transcended into another show, past Animated.
Mm-hmm.
So what's to say you can't take characters like Star Saber, Deathsaurus, or the Train Bots and do the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
Honestly, well, I think it could work rather well. Now, something else we have to take into account is while it may cater to older fans who remember these heritage characters from, you know, years back, we are constantly and never ceasingly getting new fans each and every year because kids are still being born. People are still growing up. So, you know, what we considered new, you know, 12 years ago and an old hat now, that's new to someone else now. You know, so someone hasn't seen that before. So if we were to bring back, say, I don't know, like recently we saw in Generations, we saw Waspinator, Rattrap, Tankor here. You know, the average 6 and 7 year old, they have no idea who those characters are. And if they were to utilize those characters in a mythos, in the comics and the cartoon, I don't see how it would be a bad thing. I think it could work because mm-hmm. it's a new thing for them. They haven't seen these characters, and it would be a chance to reintroduce them to a new, younger audience.
Well, Ultram or at TFPFOZ, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. He tweeted, "What if they were RID season 2 characters? The target demographic wouldn't care who they were before." Mm-hmm. I mean, that just lends exactly to what you were saying.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Don.
Well, I was going to say what Jim just said basically is the synopsis for Brave. Every year is someone's first year of a giant robot series.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you had 9 years worth of Brave, but no other than an umbrella theme, the Brave of X, Y, or Z, but you did not have the shows interconnecting. You had no crossovers. Every year was its own standalone year. So you've hit upon the very thing they used Brave in Japan after Transformers. Because
mm-hmm.
every year, so if you look at it that way, a series with Japanese characters, I think you would need in the first episode, though, to sort of cement it in the American universe, just as far as so people have a place of reference that it does take place in this universe they're aware of. Like, for example, it opens up with, let's say, Star Saber talking to Optimus Prime, and they're on a very distant planet, a distant galaxy. So pretty much they're in their own world, but they're part of the larger universe. That way you sort of have that cementing, okay, that's why we don't know these people. They're so far away, or they're taking place in a galaxy, a nebula, whatever the case may be.
One nebulos.
Right. But they are part of Optimus Prime's Autobots or Megatron's Decepticons. It's the same war.
You might have a cameo with Optimus Prime talking to him
Exactly. Just to say that you know that Starsaber is not just some guy out of thin air. He may be, but he knows Optimus, and Optimus put him in charge of this whatever.
Wasn't that Beast Wars? Wasn't that those characters are straight out of the air?
Exactly.
And that revitalized the whole Transformers brand.
I was thinking Master Force is what came to mind for me.
Yeah, but I'm just saying with today's kids, even if this is their first new show, it may be an easier time to get around these new people than they've never heard of. If it's explained in show why we've never heard of them.
Yeah.
Comes down to marketing and character recognition. So you can have, just like the current TV show on right now, these are all new guys to kids, but Bumblebee is your staple. They know Bumblebee from all the shows. They know Bumblebee from the movies. So if you were to have a show, it doesn't matter where the characters come from. They can come from the UK, from Japan, from G1, any era of Transformers. As long as there's that one relatable character, that top tier A character that transcends all the different forms of media, that gives you your entryway into all these other characters, because people already know who Bumblebee is, or at least they think they know who Bumblebee is from the films and from previous TV shows. So I don't think it matters where the characters come from or if they're all new characters. As long as you have your staple tier A character that is instantly recognizable by fans, consumers, adults.
Yeah. Well, PFOZ on Twitter, he continues, "I have no fictional or toyetic experience with those characters, so to me they're just new, and I like new things. Usual proviso cost." You know, I mean, obviously if they're too expensive, he's not going to buy them. But, you know, if he likes new things, he'll get them. Cyberwolf says, "Sign me up. Any chance to get original characters and with modern engineering, I'm all for." Transformers is such a rich, deep history brand after so many years of being on the store shelves since 1984 and even before with Diaclone and Microman, Microchange. These designs have been around for decades. And I don't really see any reason. Yes, I love new characters. I mean, the strong arm Gregivore mold design is a great design. I'm not going to knock it off, and say that they should never create anything new. Let's just create old stuff. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is that, you know, there is such a rich history here. There's no reason that you can't give a nod to the fans of the line for throughout the years and just say, okay, yeah, we got a whole cast of characters here. I keep using the RID 2.0, the 2015 show as an example, because it's what's new right now. And it's a good example of almost an entirely new cast. I mean, Bumblebee and Grimlock are about the only identifiable names in it so far. I think somebody said that Skybite showed up.
No, I don't think Skybite's shown up.
Okay.
No.
Jim, that would be awesome, Jim, for your reference, this is Gregivore. It is the Japanese version of Grigibur, I guess, from first R.I.D. Yeah. And they took Strong Arm and painted her up as a Decepticon.
I was not aware of this.
Yes.
Is it Gregivore?
Gregivore.
Who's Greg and why is he at war?
Yeah.
It's insane. It's insane Galvatron, and he's at war with all of you.
Yeah, oh, okay. Hopefully that mold is the future Smallfoot repaint in a GoBot series, but that's neither here nor there.
You know, she's not that bad. This toy is not that bad. It's not the greatest, but it's not that bad.
Oh no, I like Strong Arm. It's got the hands in a box syndrome that I don't care for.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
But that's
don't be nitpicky.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying that's just.
No picking of nits.
No.
Hey, let me give you another example, just sitting here listening to this. Transformers Prime, we had a character called Skyquake.
Yes.
Who was Skyquake? From the UK. That character had never been in animated fiction before. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about, since I happened to be a part of that show, you know, who could we make that that's all new, that we can totally reinvent whichever way we want to reinvent them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, all right, well, you know what? You know a character who we could play with is Skyquake, but he's going to be these colors. And that was a way of just – it's just the name, mm-hmm. but it introduces that character and eventually that toy into the modern mainframe of fiction.
Mm-hmm. And if you remember, whenever Skyquake first came on the show and the toy came out, there was actually quite a bit of buzz from my recollection. I was excited. I was like, hey, you know, we're getting a namesake of a character. I mean,
right.
And he was a jet. You know, that it met the two requirements for me. You know, I mean, you know, and
he was the right colors.
And he was the right colors. I mean, it met the criteria for me of what I'm talking about right here. I mean, let's say, for example, you know, the Decepticons in the RID 2015 series have like beast, like a beast motif. Okay, introduce Death Source, you know, so you got one that's a dragon or a kaiju, you know. So I think it'd fit right in. The Lyle Kaiser, you know, I mean, Lyle Kaiser's got like beast elements on them. Look at Kill Bison had the bison horns. Hellbat had the bats. You had
Rodimus.
Rodimus.
Nice.
Incidentally, Rick, I want to talk to you about an idea I have with Rodimus later. But
I think Trypticon would be good to add into that one.
Here's what I'll say. I agree with all those characters. And we can sit here all night and name characters that have a beast element and
mm-hmm.
you know, Ravage mm-hmm. and Laserbeak, but I just think, unfortunately, the producers and the brand team just don't have that fan knowledge at the moment. I can't think of anyone who's there that has that deep knowledge to pull that out of their ass and say,
I think
Death Source, that's a character we can reinvent. Yeah, we'll change the name, but it's going to be him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could call it Desaurus or something other, you know. I mean, it can hearken to his Japanese name. But I'm seeing a lot of stuff, you know, with the Combiner Wars. It tells me that they're going back and looking at things and saying, hey, you know, these are some characters we can do some stuff with. And looking ahead at Titan Wars, some of the designs that we've got coming, if it is true that, you know, we're getting a blaster that's a headmaster, you know, Blaster wasn't originally a headmaster, but if he looks like Blaster and he has a gimmick that was once in Transformers and they're reintroducing it, mm-hmm. I'm all for it. You know, Rick, you were talking a little bit about that before show. You know, what if you reinvented a little bit? As long as the core things like the character And if you can carry over, I mean, if he's still a tape deck and still has the tapes, but he's also a headmaster, I'm fine with that. But if you just, okay, here's a Jet, and we're going to paint him like Blaster and call him Blaster, but he's not a tape deck, to me that's a bit off. It's like, might as well just call him something different.
Okay, so you're saying that War for Cybertron Blaster, he wasn't a tape deck. He was a, you know, like an armored APC type vehicle. That's not a Blaster to you, despite
it is because he had had the gimmick, you know, had the little disc gimmick.
Minions.
The minions. so that was enough. I'm just wanting to say, have the core elements of the character there, or at least most of them. It doesn't have to have all of them. Like, for example, like I just said, you know, I mean, it's possible that in the new Titan Wars, he may be a headmaster. I'm fine with that, you know.
I'm not trying to challenge you. I'm just trying to say that I'm more basic about it in general. Like, for me, Megatron's going to be Megatron. Not movie Megatron, but Megatron in animated, he's a helicopter. And Prime, he's a jet. He's G2, he's a tank. G1, he's a gun. It's still Megatron. It's still Megatron to me. And maybe that's his character trait, that in every single show, he's just something different.
Ultimately, I think what it goes back to is, like we were talking, you know, like all the kids know Bumblebees, just having that one element about a character that is so memorable that builds that connection there. Like the horns and faceplate on an Optimus, or you know, having the minions for Blaster and Soundwave, the bucket head on Megatron, you know,
visual cues that tells you unequivocally this. It's like Cyclonus wouldn't be Cyclonus without the bunny ears.
Armada.
All right. So what we're getting at then, what I'm getting from all of you is that it's the deco that is the more important, rather than transformation, alt mode. It really comes down to.
It's an amalgamation. For me personally, it's an amalgamation of all of them.
It depends.
It has to have. It doesn't have to have all the points, but it has to have a good portion of them. You know, like you said, you, for example, the War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron Blaster. He had the colors. He had the head sculpt. He had the minions, but he wasn't a tape deck. At least he hit on most of the aspects and everything. It was sufficient. Now, if he was Blaster, didn't have the head sculpt, so one, he didn't look like Blaster in robot mode, but he had the minions. It might not have been a buy for me.
Yeah, you get a lot of movie characters that are like that, unfortunately.
There's, yes.
You get the random repaint that's, this is Swindle now.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I thought of when you started mentioning that was, like here, Machine Wars Prowl. You don't necessarily have the exact G1 deco. However, you still have a scheme of a little bit of black on a mostly white canvas. You have the front of the car, the hood, as the chest. You have a section of the car that is reminiscent of the wings, which in this case is the spoiler. You have wheels on the feet here. I mean, there are different aspects of it that ultimately lend itself to an homage of any character, more than just the deco or the paint. A lot of times it could be the head sculpt. Even it could be like we were saying with Blaster. You know, it was, you know, at one time that repaint of Cybertron Soundwave, and it had the repainted head. You know, that's not really much of a Blaster. Then later on we got the Generations one that, you know, still wasn't a tape deck, but you had the more G1 accurate head sculpt. You know, you had the minions, you had the opening chest cavity, you know.
Yeah. Well, I do want to move on to our main topic of discussion tonight, but this is an idea of what I want to do with the question of the day on Twitter. And it's caused for some good discussion here, some good thought. And we'd love to hear from you guys who are listening or watching on the show. If you have input on this topic of discussion, this question, be sure to tweet us on our Twitter account at TFYLP, and be sure to use the hashtag TFYLP in there too. And we'd love to hear from you. Let's move on. And I also want to welcome Hang Up Chan back. He joined us quickly in the pre-show, but welcome back.
Thanks. Sorry, I had to do husbandly jobs.
So. Oh, okay. I see how you're going there. you're good in your husbandly jobs.
That leaves it open to so many things.
So I've got to ask, how are things in the future?
Wet. It's been raining.
Raining?
Yeah. Hey, you want to qualify that remark?
So it's summer here. That must mean it's winter there, right?
Yeah, definitely. Winter in Australia.
Yes.
In the middle of the year. Yeah, gotta love it.
That would just be so weird to me. I'm like,
That's why they do Christmas in July. Yeah, because it's winter, and a lot of companies just do Christmas in July for no reason.
Hmm. I'm glad we don't have Christmas in July here, so I don't get a Christmas present and a birthday present as the same thing.
Oh. Yeah, that would really screw over the convention schedule too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Our main topic of discussion tonight. We've already actually got a question on Facebook. I'll get to it here in a moment. Our main topic of discussion tonight is the gimmicks of Transformers. What is a gimmick? We briefly talked about it earlier. You know, a gimmick is defined in Transformers as something that is not the main purpose of the toy. Okay, the original purpose of the toy, the gimmick was, okay, you had one visual form, a robot, and then it converted into another visual form, a jet plane, a car, a gun, a tape deck. So that was the gimmick. It wasn't long thereafter that other gimmicks started coming in. You know, you had combining, you had minions, you know, like little mini cassettes. You had, and this is something I mentioned in the intro or in the title, rub signs. An interesting little story about the rub signs, how those came about too. I believe it had something to do with G1 Shockwave and the Galactic Man from Radio Shack. We'll talk about that here briefly. But a gimmick is defined as anything that a toy does extra that you that is not usually done by the rest of the franchise or the rest of the line. Let's talk a little bit about the very first gimmick, transforming. How did that change the face of toys? And Rick, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this right now. How did transforming toys change?
Well, you look,
I know
you
it's
look
a huge question.
The Transformer stories first started showing up. So we're in the mid to late 70s at this point, before the brand ever existed. And you were coming off the 60s still, which was still the space era. The Cowboys and Indians toys had gone away. Mm-hmm. You had your G.I. Joe. You had your Marx figures. You had your Mego figures. And then you get these metal toys. And you think about any metal toy that you got during the 70s, it was just a static figure. And now you have these die-cast metal figures that turn into something else. It's a puzzle that you're interacting with the toy besides using your fantasy to play with it. So now you've increased the amount of playtime a child spends with a specific item. because they're transforming it. And you're also increasing the fantasy that the child uses with the toy. It's not just the fantasy of, hey, this is a good guy, this is the bad guy, they're going on an adventure. This is a guy, he's going to turn into a truck, he's going to drive over here, turn into a robot, and kick that guy's ass now. So it was revolutionary. And once it became the brand Transformers, the whole concept, it's no wonder the concept exploded and became such a huge hit. And per capita sold more figures and earned Hasbro more money in the 80s than it ever has in the 90s or since. You had He-Man, you had Star Wars. Everything was a guy in a vehicle. Transformers were the vehicles. And there's nothing else out there like that. GoBots came later, Mass came later, but there was really nothing else like that.
So
I'm going to throw it over to Jim Black.
Yeah,
not the face. Not the face.
Throw it in his face.
I'm gonna tag you in, Jim.
Nice. Honestly, yeah, like you were saying, you know, it was a completely new thing, and it took a few aspects that children, you know, have pretty well always been fond of in recent history. Is you've got robots, which is your science fiction element that goes off of the whole space race era. My dad and my mom, for instance, they, you know, my dad was fascinated by the NASA space race with the Soviet Union and trying to get to the moon. You know, my mom grew up, she was a lifelong Trekkie. You know, and so this was something that was so influential in so many aspects of pop culture at the time. And so it took that and took it and put it with something else that has always been popular with kids, is, you know, cars and trucks and things like that.
I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
that's a much better point than what I made.
You've got that play value there. And so they had a robot. And yet, at the same time, they had a semi or a tape player, and they could play with this too, as they were going along with right. But I mean, and you know, they could run their semi and run over the robot, or, you know, and then have it turn into the robot and punch the other one in the face or smash them together, whatever they want, dig it through the dirt. It didn't matter.
You had a very violent childhood, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm scared.
Busted a lot of my old toys. But like with the dirt, you know, the Constructicons, you had the shovel on Bone Crusher and things like that.
You had a Tonka toy. That's your Tonka toy. Yeah. You had your race car.
You go to the sandbox with those things. You know, you had the little Hot Wheels tracks. You took, like, Bumblebee here, and you tried to get him to fit under the Hot Wheels tracks, and you ended up flinging him across the room that way. I mean, there were so many things with that original line from its inception that were just phenomenal, and that's what I think spoke most prevalently to the children of that generation. Was it took all those different genres and combined them flawlessly.
And you know what? Let's not forget that it was also a comic book.
Yes.
And it was a cartoon show.
Started out as a comic.
That had very defined fiction, so you had the trifecta right there.
Actually, now that I think of it, talking about like the space race and that, Omega Supreme in the 85 line, there's a rocket. This is in the years where the space shuttle had already taken over and the rocket itself was obsolete. And yet you still had that going on.
And, well, then you had Skylinks.
Oh, yeah, Astrotrain.
Yeah.
But
the thing is that the Transformers line came along in 1984 at a very, very opportune time. It was not long after Ronald Reagan had signed in the act that allowed basically for children's toys to be basically advertised in cartoons. In cartoon form. That's the simplified version of it. It's a lot more complex than that.
But
in the interest of time, there are some legal things that happened that allowed the Transformers brand to be born. for one reason or another, Diaclone, Microman, they weren't as successful over here. Diaclone was brought over, wasn't it? But Microman was not.
Diaclone was brought over here. I want to say it was a Toys R Us exclusive for 83. It was like just prior to the Transformers as we know it now. There was like the Red Sun Streaker, the Trailbreaker or Hoist mold?
Ironhide.
Was it Ironhide or was it Skids? No, it was Ironhide. It was the Black Ironhide. That's right, it was the Black Ironhide. And then we actually got one in Diachron, which is the 83 line, that never made it to Transformers. It was the Multiforce 14 box set. It was like these smaller vehicles that you could put, like little Green Army Man or something into. There's 14 of these things, and they all plug together and form this static robot with posable arms.
Hmm. But, you know, those things all came together. It was like a perfect storm, mm-hmm. if you will, that became this line that is now known as the Transformers. But, you know, in those early 80s, Hasbro and Takara, they had these molds at their disposal. But they needed a little more padding, and they started going out and finding other toys that also transformed. And that's was it Takatoku that had the Whirl and Roadbuster molds. We had
that was a series called Dorvac.
Yeah,
Roadbuster was Dorvac itself, and they were all like piloted vehicles that transformed, very similar to Robotech, but with the three main mechas being that's right, Jim's got it. Yeah. The three main mechas were like the prototypes. They were the prototypes. And then so you got a lot of Gundam and Macross kind of combined into that one thing. I don't think it was very popular as a series though. They did one series and then they did a special in which they killed off like two of the main characters. It's like, oh, hey, a meteorite's coming to the planet. Let's just kill the lead character right there.
Well, but the thing is that there were other lines that were being introduced into Transformers. We had Whirl. We had Roadbuster. Jetfire from the Macross line, and which, you know, you can still today find out on the market you could call it the intermediate Macross Jetfire. It's the Jetfire that still has the little Macross insignias on the wings. Mm-hmm. I actually used to have one, bone white, complete, and I'm still kicking myself to this day for selling it. I still had it in the styrofoam. Oh, it was gorgeous. But
I laugh at your pain and drink your tears, Jerome.
Yes. and you can take your King Jader and yes. But then there was a little bit of an issue that arose whenever, okay, there was this thing called Galactic Man. I can't remember the exact story behind this, but generally what it is Hasbro and Takara had gotten a license to use this toy as Shockwave in Transformers. But at the same time, the Radio Shack company, I guess Tandy, had released it, had also obtained a license to release this toy as Galactic Man through the Radio Shack stores, hence yep. Shackwave, the gray Shackwave. Mm-hmm. So both of these toys were legit legal toys. The Shackwave was not a knockoff. I mean, that's a common misconception that I've heard throughout the fandom, is that Shackwave was a knockoff or an illegal use of Shockwave. No, they were both licensed.
Officially licensed product.
And it was because of this that we came to the rub signs. How to know that your Transformers were true Transformers. Hasbro started sticking these on the toys. I believe Takara did too, did they not?
Not positive. Yeah. Probably.
At some point, they,
they incorporated them. I think the second wave of the 1985 stuff, when they did the running change, added the Rub Signs, but not the initial release, because a lot of it was taken straight from the Die Clone stuff, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So that's where we got the Rub Signs from. I mean, it was kind of like a behind the scenes thing. I always thought, hey, this is just a cool little thing. As a kid, I really didn't know about, I saw the Shockwave in stores and I'm like, that looks like Shockwave, but he's not purple. Why is he not purple? I didn't get it as a kid, you know.
That's like the Ghostbusters versus the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Why are they called the Ghostbusters?
I don't remember the movie there being a talking gorilla.
Because the other ones are fake.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that happened, but today I kind of wonder if it would even happen today. Could that happen today with today's legal red tape and crap that happens? I don't know.
We could have the real GoBots, who knows?
The real GoBots.
The real Transformers.
Yeah, that's right.
But are there any other gimmicks since we're talking on Generation 1 and the beginning of talk about a distraction. Okay. Is there anything from Generation 1 that we want to talk about? Yeah. Outside of, say, combining headmasters?
Triple changers was there almost from the start.
Yeah,
and we didn't get triple changers again until years later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What were you getting ready to say, Don?
I was also going to say incorporating real world toys. This may be stretching the thing, but incorporating real world things into the Transformers line, like Perceptor, who actually was a working microscope. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, so that may be considered a gimmick as well.
Yeah. That also is, I guess. That is a gimmick in and of itself in role play. You know, you had, like Jim mentioned earlier, Soundwave Blaster were kind of role play toys. Mm-hmm. Perceptor is obviously a role play toy. You could actually look in it. He wasn't a great magnifier, but he could actually magnify
14 times.
Yes.
But actually, that being said, because these things, the original Japanese version. So for Soundwave, he was, what was it? I can't remember the Diclone version of it, was actually a working FM radio.
Yes.
It was either him or Blaster. I can't remember. One of the two was an actual working FM radio.
It was Soundwave because he had earbuds and they weren't included. That's why he had the empty earbud slots in the first Soundwaves. Because the slots were there in the styrofoam, but there was nothing in the slots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So look, that was an actual radio, and the original version of Perceptor actually had a stronger. Like, I think the Japanese version had a better magnification compared to the American version. I think it was some kind of safety issue. Japan just doesn't give a crap about safety issue. That's how Fortress Maximus can get re-released. So.
those American kids, they can't see those germs. They're too dangerous.
I saw a funny meme on Facebook the other day. It was a dude, a picture of a dude, had his leg in a wood chipper. And the meme said, let's remove all the safety labels from everything and let nature take its course. And I totally agree with that. You know, the Japanese, you know, they don't have to put those silly warning labels like that on there. Yes, I think they have the choking hazard and stuff, but, you know, really. But that being said, Megatron is also another role-play toy. Role-play has played a huge part in Transformers. I mean, during the movie lines, we had those swords and the masks and all kinds of things like that.
Armada Laserbeak, even.
Yeah, Armada Laserbeak.
You got to count him. The Energon Star Saber, even the large role player. I think had a gun.
That monstrosity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then beyond Generation 1, let's get into Beast Wars. Anybody want to tackle Beast Wars and talk a little bit about that?
Beast Wars.
Can we mention G2 first?
Oh, well, yeah, G2. Yeah, I'm totally
because G2, I think, is where we saw a lot of innovation that we still see nowadays in importance.
Like Tyrannosaurus.
Like a blue Tyrannosaurus, yes, there's that. But also, we got ball and socket joints. And people don't realize this was the first time in G2 when we got these ball and socket joints, which increased the opposability of these characters immensely. Take a look at like Sea Spray and the Cliff Jumper reissue, this mini bot reissues, and then look at your Cyber Jets. Absolutely, complete stark differences.
Should we count my Action Masters and their legs?
Action Masters copy G.I. Joe for that? I thought that was based on the G.I. Joe ring system.
I thought Action Masters was mostly O-rings in the hips and stuff for movement. I didn't know they were ball joints.
I don't know, is it?
Hurry, break yours apart and find out.
I totally should.
Don't listen to me.
But you know, but you also had like from Dreadwing, ripple fire missiles. we did get that with Optimus Prime, Action Master Optimus Prime, who shot 6 missiles. Dreadwing shot 16, I believe it's 16. So I mean, you're looking at and then you've got just so many different, you know, you've got the air pump from a Combat Hero Optimus and Combat Hero Megatron. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of things, like Laser Rod Optimus Prime, probably one of the best examples of G2 because you incorporate the ripple fire missiles, the air pump guns, the light up weapons.
Since you brought that up, Don,
since
you brought that up, I was wanting to address one thing. We actually had a question on Facebook in our TFYP group. From Emmett Srezovich. I hope I'm saying that right. If not, I apologize. He asks, so what was the first toy line to use light piping? Was it a Hasbro property?
Oh, geez.
Was it Brave?
The first time I ever saw the light piping gimmick in a toy was Metalhead in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He had the brain in the back of his head, and it made his
eye. Oh, you're right.
That's the first time I ever saw that.
Good call.
Yeah. Well, now let me ask you this: Would Mutagen Man be more of a use of clear plastics or translucent plastics?
I never had Mutagen Man.
Mutagen
Man had a whole different thing where you put the water inside.
Yeah, but that's where you started getting things that would eventually lead to Great Charger. That's my name for him. That's what I call him, is Grape Charger.
Clarify for those who are listening to this on the audio version.
Yeah, this is the Japanese zombie cliff jumper that is done in a translucent purple that is basically the same color as grape jelly.
I
thought you said Grave.
Yeah, I thought you meant Grave because he was a dead as a doorknob. Grave Jumper. Grave Jumper.
By the way, you're talking to, you got one of the guys who killed Cliff Jumper on your show right now.
Yeah.
You did a good job.
Well, Rick,
he's a red shirt, man.
Well, as a quick side note, Rick, could The Rock not stay around long enough on a weekly basis?
It came down to money.
Money.
Okay, look. Sidebar, real quick.
Tangent.
The initial plan was to kill him at the end of season one when Megatron showed up for the first time, just to show you how badass Megatron was. But they moved it up to the front of the season, and because of that, it was a one episode gig. They thought, let's spend some money and get someone big, and that's how The Rock got it. Which is why he didn't come back for the second time Cliff Jumper was on the show.
He doesn't stay around WWE either, so.
He's kind of, you know, wham bam.
It's a good movie.
He's like a Rolling Stone.
we got the translucent plastics. I mean, so much that we have now.
Don, you mentioned earlier that in G2 was the first time we saw ball and socket joints. That's not true. Okay, Generation One, we did have a ball and socket transformer. G1 Astral Train. His shoulders.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
good
right.
Point.
You're right.
Well,
you're, right.
You're yes and no. Yes, it did have that, but you're talking as a standard engineering feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it did really have it, though.
Yep.
You're right, Martin, but I didn't even think about that. But I think as far as them realizing we can get a lot more motion with a lot less pins and parts by using the ball and socket joints, and that's what gives us awesome things like cyber jets.
So do you suppose that when they were designing it, that may have been kind of a way to kind of test the waters on that and see how it would work?
Well, I'm betting someone at some point said, "Hey, wait a minute. I've got one of them Astro Trains, and it uses that weird connection. What if we use this instead of all these other pins and hinges and parts and see if it works? We'll save some money that way."
You don't think someone had a Gundam on their shelf and said, "Hey, this"?
No, like the way just this Transformers.
Are you going to do the campaign of Bounty Hunters?
Speaking of G2.
Yeah.
G2? I've been listening to you guys for like the past 30 minutes.
Yeah. We said G2 three times. He appeared.
Yeah.
Hey!
It's like kicking a click. If you say the words G2 neon or cyberjet, like Don had to jinx us a few moments ago, and here comes.
I have to correct.
It's like Beetlejuice.
I have to correct Don here. He's talking about ball joints. Ball joints, not Don. Not Duran. Don. Don. Dude, do you not remember Raiden? Actually has ball joint sockets.
I haven't disassembled Raiden in 7 years.
And then you also forgot about Astro Train.
They mentioned Astro Train.
No, we brought that up.
It's slightly.
Yeah, but Astro Train, that wasn't a standard engineering feature, so yeah. I disqualified that.
But anyway, Raiden was. Yeah.
Semantics.
That's one reason G2 is so awesome. Not just for the characters, not for the colors, not for the experimentation and themes, but
it
also from
the
engineering
standpoint. Of the colors.
Yeah. Gimmicks!
That's all I guess.
But now we go to Beast Wars when things got really freaky.
We saw the return of the rub symbol in Beast Wars, if I recall.
Actually, yes, we did.
Yeah, did we? And we also saw the
they were
crystals.
Smaller, though. They were smaller.
Actually, I have Manterror, the praying mantis. He actually has a Predacon rub sign on the top of his head.
Oh, Manterror is one of my favorites. I love Manterror.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean,
I just have to say this because I have yet to even. Yeah, this thing is unbelievable. This is actually not mine. It's my buddy's.
It's yours now. Possession's 9 times to the law.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, this thing is unbelievable. Sorry, I just have to say
that. I have to say this 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I have to say this. I just thought if I don't say it, I'll forget it.
No, it's cool.
Plastikon just said that was his buddy's. My buddy Devastator. The little plush Devastator you can carry around with you.
My buddy and me, right?
My buddy.
I could see him and Devastator just kind of skipping along down the street there.
Yes, long walks on the beach.
My buddy, so I'm going to this wrestling event where the fans bring the weapons, and I was tempted to bring a Devastator so that one of the wrestlers can use it in hitting one of the opponents.
That would be so epic.
No, that's not going to work. I need to bring a Fort Max.
Actually, that's one thing I have to complain, though. You know, it came to G2 Devastator. No firing fists. That was a gimmick they brought. What?
That's true. They removed that gimmick.
They could have gave, and honestly, what they could have done is done what they did with, like, Bruticus and them and gave them, like, a missile launching.
Actually, at BotCon 96 or 95, 94, 95, I asked the Hasbro reps, and I asked them about the fist and Devastator, and they said it was because of in that short period of time between when Devastator first came out and G2, the safety laws had changed so much. That's why you had to have those long cyberjet missiles and you had to have, you know, that's why you had long cyber jet missiles. That's why you didn't have a lot of the rocket firing stuff anymore, because they had changed that fast.
You know, that's a good segue there, Don. A lot of gimmicks either come about or change depending on the ever-changing toy safety laws. What are some of the toy safety laws that changed the gimmicks?
I got this. I got the best example. Safety Megatron.
I still want that.
It was hideous.
Give us that thing, because I really want a orange chromed Megatron.
Wait, Rick is trying to say something.
No, I'm not. No. I will say that the gun law did affect something. I will say the gun law did affect something that I worked on while I was there at the Big H. The little legend sized Megatron. Ah. Even something that was so small like that, it still needed that orange cap. Otherwise, it wasn't allowed to ship into California.
All right. Now, Dorn, I found a picture of Safety Megatron. I know we brought this up before, but just so everybody can see
hideously awesome
what we're talking about, I found a picture. Here's the picture. So everybody can see. And this was shown after the fact. The toy still could, but when they showed us this picture, the toy still could not come out.
Even if that toy was all orange, it still would not be able to come out to the show.
Really?
But is the colors
of Megatron?
No. That is, they looked at doing a reissue of Megatron.
I'm tempted to just get a reissue of it and make one, because I really want that.
Let me finish. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
When they showed us this picture, they were answering the question, I don't remember what year this was, why we had not gotten a reissue of Megatron. And they had actually shown us whatever year this was.
That was 2004. I showed that in my panel.
Okay, Rick. Okay, cool. I showed that in my Transformers
That Never Made It panel at BotCon.
That's right.
The commemorative series was still out of Toys R Us.
Yeah. So, and that picture, they still couldn't make it, even with it like that.
Mm-hmm. I will say that there was a box made for it.
Oh, I would have loved to see that. Have you got a picture of the box?
And I will say there's only one of those Megatrons in existence.
Ooh.
And
you have it.
It's a very cool toy to hold in your hands.
I wanted one of those so bad. I mean, it's like so hideous and beautiful. Yeah. I love it. I mean, the neon orange and the shiny blue. It's gorgeous.
Unfortunately, over time, some of the blue starts to chip away, but it's...
I want to know why we haven't got like a Hegemon or anything in those colors
yet.
Oh, okay.
Yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, third parties out there, get on to that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Please.
But for people listening, if you hear us in the past few weeks talking about Safety Astrotrain and the set that comes with the Blitzwing, this is what coined the Safety Astrotrain name, is that Safety Megatron.
Uh-huh.
What do you think that Megatron would be worth if it ever showed up on eBay one day?
Oh, God. It would probably outdo... Do more than G2 Minasaur.
I would think pretty close to the G2 Minasaur even more.
Because there's only one of them.
Right.
Well, then it would probably quadruple that.
Yeah, and then...
Somebody out there would have that kind of money to blow on it.
And if you had the box that was made for it...
The box was the original box was probably thrown out, but the digital files, I found them in a random CD when I used to work at Hasbro. There was a full Photoshop Illustrator file created for the box. Wow. It looked just like the other reissue boxes, only it had those funky ass pictures of Megatron on it.
Do you still have access to those? Because I don't think the fandom has seen those.
When my department was cut from Hasbro and I was let go, unfortunately, all my stuff, all the stuff I had archived, all the prototypes I had had, all the original G1, G.I. Joe art, gem art. A lot of that was thrown in the trash the next day. So there's a ton of G1 art and G.I. Joe art and prototypes and stuff that
did no
the
one
fans never seen, and concepts for Action Masters that have never been released, and concepts for Pretenders that have never been seen, that I was just waiting for the right publication or panel to show those in, and that all got thrown out. That all went in the trash.
Thank you, Hasbro, for helping to preserve your brand.
Yes.
It's just like Doctor Who.
To archive this stuff or something?
Yeah, I was the archive, but to them, remember, it has no monetary value. It's just stuff that's taking up space that could be someone's office.
Yeah.
When somebody leaves, their stuff gets thrown out.
You would think they would design, like, at one of the major corporate places, that just, like, an entire like museum of the stuff they've been putting out instead of just like throwing it away.
There is an archive that has three copies of almost everything that's been released going back to the very beginning. And I'm talking, these things are going back to the beginning of Hasbro. It is impressive when you see it in person, but it's been pillaged. Some people have taken stuff, doesn't return it. There's no protection on the window, so some stuff has been bleached by the sun to be completely white. I will say I did find the whitest Jetfires I've ever seen in that storage.
Nice.
But,
Rick, I just had one question before we get back onto the gimmicks topic. Was that Safety Megatron box? What artwork would have been used for that? Would they have done?
I believe it was Pat Lee artwork. I think it was Dreamwave. Dreamwave. To be the
oh god,
that was around that time frame though.
Yeah. Because I know some of the G1 reissues.
I think it was the art from the More Than Meets the Eye book.
Okay.
Yeah. Now gimmicks. Getting back to the topic, we kind of derailed. Of course, Cyburn 2 mentioned last week, we wouldn't be TFYLP if we didn't derail once or twice during a show. Sure. But we do come back to the topic, gimmicks. And why did what the heck is going on here? My computer's going crazy all of a sudden.
It's wigging it out.
Yeah, it's totally wigging out.
Look at Skynet. Now we know where it originated from. Yeah.
I'm sitting here and like I start getting all kinds of windows opening up all at the same time. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
It wants to play a game.
It's T-virus. That you got.
Yeah, Skynet is interfering with my computer.
It's just Windows 10.
No, I'm actually on Mac. So,
but speaking of Megatron, one thing that was cool about the Megatron that came out in Japan was that it actually fired. It came with pellets.
Yep, it did.
And it actually had a firing feature, which it never had that in the U.S.
Well, that lands
so it was pretty much like the Japanese version that was released that actually had the pellet firing mechanism that you load in the top.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that lends itself to what we were talking about right before we kind of derailed there was the fact that there are legal reasons things have changed. For example, the commemorative series G1 Ultra Magnus has those ridiculously long shoulder missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Starscream. That's got the little short missiles, but they're super long now.
Yeah. What are some examples of those of changes that gradually changed that made these toys different from their first release? Well, I'm not just talking about reissues. I'm talking about, okay, you have I'm trying to think of a good example of this.
I think I've got one maybe.
Well, there was a version of Ultra Magnus like way back when we were kids that didn't even have the spring launching gimmick for the missiles. That was like
the plastic wheel version?
KB?
Yeah.
With the unpainted face.
Yeah, and one gimmick we lost completely because safety regulations was the spark shooting action from the Monster Bots.
Good
and,
one.
And yeah. the small Autobot Guzzle, Sizzle, and Fizzle. I can't remember the
Spark
the
Bots.
Sparkbots.
Sparkbots!
Good.
Cindersaur and Flamefeather.
Flamefeather, yeah. So we lost that completely as an action feature due to safety laws, which is why we had those funky, stupid, light-up internal dinosaur figures from Age of Extinction that barely lit up. Because they couldn't shoot sparks anymore.
Yep.
Well, in G2, they only released the ones that were over in the UK of the spark bots. We didn't even get them during Generation 2. G1 was it.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking about, though, are toys that were released earlier in the franchise but then came out later as a different character or
Bruticus.
That was changed because of toy safety laws. For example,
I want to say because you got blast off on the nose cone. Mm-hmm. It was a sharpened nose cone, and even up to its 2001 Robots in the Skies release, it still had that same nose cone.
Yeah.
But then the next release, you had the Robots in the Skies, the Armada packaging, Walmart deco, the urban camo, yep. and also the Universe desert camo. Both of those had a rounded nose cone on blast off or move or.
I actually got that one from you, Rick, here a while back, and I had totally forgot about the rounded nose cone on that.
Yeah, I sold that one because I actually have one in the package that actually has the sharp pointed nose that I found in the closet somewhere.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I got boxes of shit here.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good examples. I don't think there's too many examples of figures that have come out and then being re-released that have that many changes. I think we might have nailed them all. There's definitely figures that got released that cannot be released again due to safety laws, like Megatron, the Sparkabots.
Yep. Fortress Maximus.
Fortress Maximus, that's another, yeah, that's another example. Yeah. They tried bringing that over here, but no matter how much they tried, it just wouldn't pass the drop test.
That's okay. They're just making a new one.
Mm.
Yep.
This is why I get my stuff from Japan.
Well, it was. I don't know if it was actually a toy safety law change or if it was just a different firing mechanism just for the sake of a different kind of mechanism. But we go from like spring loaded gimmicks to the pressure missiles. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was a safety issue, actually.
Okay.
Kids eating the springs or breaking and doing that?
I think it was the spring shooting into the eyes. But
eyes or face.
Yeah.
How stupid could children be?
Yeah.
Well,
hey, and
you haven't been.
I'm going to answer that.
Yeah. and Prime Smokestacks. That's a great example. Whoever put that in the chat. Prime having to get his stack shortened.
This is true. They could snap off and create.
Yeah, for the G1 version and the masterpiece. But that's not so much of a safety thing, as it is a packaging thing to make sure that it didn't break while in the package. Again, due to the drop test.
Well,
here's a good one. Generation 2, you had a lot of spring-loaded stuff, but toward the tail end, you had the cyber jets that were like fire. Was that also a running change, or were those going to be a different design totally?
I think those might have been designed that way.
Yeah. I think they were, because if you really look at it, there was no way – there was no place for a spring-loaded gimmick on those.
Well, my thing is if they were not going to include – say they were going to include like a missile-firing thing that was spring-loaded that can actually go in their hands, because they all actually can hold a weapon, but it really doesn't come with a weapon. The only thing you can do is put the missile in their hand. So my question is do you think they came with a spring-loaded thing and had two hands, and then they decided to swap a hand?
Well, you know what that might have been, actually? There was a set of the Cyberjets that was remolded that never came out, and they were prototyped. They're actually they belong to a private collector in Japan. So I believe those remolded versions of all three Cyberjets actually came with handheld weapons that they Ooh. Fit in the hand.
Okay.
Okay. There we go. The more you know.
Mm. Now, let's move on to what came after, I guess, Beast Wars. Did we really didn't get into Beast Wars.
Not really.
I mean, yeah.
Is Transmetal a gimmick?
Sort of.
Well,
yes.
The Return of the Rug symbol.
There were a couple of water shooters.
Mm-hmm. The mutant
Wars.
Mask. Mm-hmm. In the 96 line, the mutant mask.
That's right, you're right.
Alternate head.
Now, I know
weren't the Fusers just kind of a gimmick in themselves?
Well, they were more of Animorphs that just got pushed into the... Yeah, oh, the Fusers, right. I'm thinking the Mutants.
Yeah.
The
Fusers, wasn't that almost a gimmick in itself?
Well, I mean, so is the Dinobots in that same way, you know?
Would weapon storage be more of a feature? Because it really wasn't a thing for the longest time.
That's a good point.
And it seemed to be all Beast Wars figures had weapon storage as part of it to maintain the beast mode.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right, because Optimus Primal is a primal example. In his right forearm, he stored the mace. His left forearm had the dual blasters that could then launch the elongated missiles. In his back were the two swords.
Yeah. And Dinobots. You could also fit two extra missiles in his back, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. And look at Rat Trap. His little gun splits into two and goes into his sides where his legs are.
Right.
Yeah, I know from speaking to some of the designers who worked on that, I mean, that was before my time there. But the theory, which became a pretty big design theory throughout the years at Hasbro, was that if you lose the gun, you should still be able to transform it and have it still be recognized as that thing.
Yep.
I guess that's so one of the reasons why headmasters were so frowned upon for so many years.
Mm-hmm. What about target masters? Those guns just run off on their own.
Pretty much.
Because they have robot modes.
My whole theory on that, and this might be cold, but if you're the type of person that now my freaking printer is going crazy. What the hell?
You got a poltergeist. That's what you got. Before you know it, those cases behind him are going to open up, and then the figures are just going to start smacking them back of the head, one at a time.
It's just Zool.
But if you're
5 minutes.
If you're the type of person that if you're going to just easily lose something as integral as a head or the target master partner to it, it's not that hard to keep the damn things together. I mean, I was like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, and I was able to hold my entire collection together. It's like whenever I was done playing, I put them into a bag or put them on the toy and put them up on the shelf. I didn't lose anything that way.
But what if you were one of those kids that decide to go, like, your parents go on this long weekend, you go to the beach, and you decide to bring, like, your Devastator with you. And then you
that's
go home
on you.
With,
that's
because
on
you missed
you.
Out on, oh, my God, I couldn't find a missile because it got buried in the sand, or I can't find the fists or
but
something.
But see, that's on you. That's on you for taking that toy there. But going back to what Rick was saying, that you know, you don't want – they don't want to release a toy that, if after you transform it, it's not recognizable by because it's missing its head or it's missing its gun or it's missing its engine or what have you. The thing is, though, is that is part of the gimmick. That is part of the play pattern. And I don't want to be dictated whether or not, you know, well, we don't want to release this toy because we're afraid you'll lose a part of it. If I lose a part of it, that's on me. But I would still like to be able to play with that kind of toy.
Because they never would have released the G1 Seekers if that was the case.
Exactly. Yep. Because, I mean, hell, you lose a wing, you're screwed. Right.
Landing gear.
My G1 Skywarp, Skywarp as a kid, I did lose a rear wing from Skywarp. But it wasn't my fault. I had put him in the box.
Sure.
And, no, I put him in the box, and then I got him out and was messing with him and set him on the table. My mom picked him up and moved it, and I came back, and his rear right rear wing the little bitty wing, was gone. Couldn't find it anywhere. I was so upset at her. I'm like, Mom, you lost my wing. And years later, at the very first BotCon they ever went to, Insane Galvatron found a replacement wing for my Skywarp. And what, 20 years later, I had completed my incomplete Skywarp.
I had my Optimus Prime since 84, and I never had the fist for it. And I remember when I finally got a complete Optimus Prime in the 90s, and I had these fists, it just made the arms look so much longer. It just looked weird. Because I'd been used to playing with Optimus without the hands for
monkey arm
a decade,
Prime.
And right? It just looked weird. It just looked like it was too long.
Truck, not monkey.
Monkey, not truck.
That's why a lot of us, like, throughout the years, were like, yep, if he's going to be in truck mode, his fist going to cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not car.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, Beast Wars had other gimmicks, too.
Transmetal?
Well, do we want to mention shell forming as a gimmick? Not shelf warming, shell form.
Hey, shelf warming.
That is a
that's the byproduct.
That is a byproduct of a design theory. Shell forming is a byproduct because they said, hey, we're going to have this feature, which is the spring loaded action. And that ultimately leads to guys like this from Beast Wars Neo.
Well,
that ultimately leads to, you know, alien. When you have this feature in a lot of toys, it's going to kind of limit how much designs you can do and how much engineering you can put into it before they all look the same thing, the same way. So
basically, it leads to Break the Penguin.
You also got Dead End, the Ammonite.
He truly is a
shell former.
Is that where you're going with that?
Wow. But you got the peppermint too.
I think he's awesome. I love him. Peppermint. I found him the other day at a toy shop in Southern Indiana, Toy Fever. If you're in the Clarksville area, check them out at the Green Tree Mall. Give them a free plug there. Great guys there.
Yeah, just take the last train to Clarksville.
Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. Thanks, Don.
But they had a Beast Wars Neo Dead End there. And I'm like, I love that toy. He is exactly. He is exactly the perfect definition of a shell former. Because he basically folds up inside of his shell, but he just looks cool, and I love him. I mean, but he also has that firing spring loaded gimmick, because to transform him, you have to push down on that little
shell thing, and then he just launches the shell off.
Yeah, it launches the shell off the side.
Shell blaster.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. But
what about Big Convoy?
Somebody wanted to buy some Transformers. Where would they get them?
Well, you know, that's a good thing. If you wanted to buy vintage Transformers toys, you could go to any major convention like BotCon, TFCon, or something other and find Mega Toy Fan. You can maximize your collection with megatoyfan.com. And find all kinds of great stuff there with great deals. And you can also, if you like new stuff, third-party stuff, you can go to CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service, CapturePrey.com. And you can also save even more with the CapturePrey loyalty program. And if you order something $150 or more, you get free shipping. So great stuff there. Both of those guys are our sponsors. Check them out. Free plug there. But going back to other Beast Wars gimmicks, any other gimmicks besides would you call them changing from
what about like spring? Robot? Yeah, like what about like the spring loading action of that pill bug thing?
Retrax.
That thing.
Yeah, that didn't work. The guy who doesn't stay in robot mode.
No, when you keep him in the rolled up mode, he looks like Unicron.
He's got the quickest transformation ever. All he has to do is fall over on your shelf.
Right. it's like Beast Wars Grandus.
Power up. It is. You're not wrong.
It is.
I'm standing up, guys.
It took me a second to get that.
Right.
And if you think about it, he actually has hands almost like the current Constructicons do. They just go from side to side. They don't do much else.
Right.
I'm doing this, guys.
He's kind of got jazz hands almost.
Jazz hands. Okay. I know there was something in late.
Look, it's a jazz hand.
Leave the bad puns to the professional punter here. I mean, y'all missed my joke in the chat, for heaven's sakes. That's a great one.
Should we move on to Beast Machines?
Sure. Can we skip Beast Machines?
No. We got to do Beast Machines.
Beast Machines' gimmick was just being bad.
No.
There's some gems in that line.
But can we?
They're not truly outrageous.
Can we say that the turd on Nightscream's robot head was a gimmick?
That was poor design theory. I swear,
it looks like a tapered off turd hanging off of Nightscream's head.
I guess what they thought is that Nightscream was going to be the next Cheetor. And everyone would gravitate towards him. Well, so they said, well, let's make him at the big price point.
To kind of go along with that on Nightscream, consider he's a bat, okay? He hangs upside down. That's probably guano on his head.
Hey, Cyber guano.
Let that sink in for a moment.
Well, you know, I just thought of something, guys. And when you said the bat size, in Beast Machines, size was the gimmick for Supreme Cheetor.
Mm-hmm.
That was the gimmick.
That's a price point. That's a price point, and the gimmick was the electronic features and that terrible grappling claw.
But I mean,
it's like the $50 Bumblebee that's at stores right now. That's not a gimmick. That's just a price point, and they filled it with that character.
To me, I remember at the time they were promoting it as far as, you know, it's as big as your house cat. So they were using the size as part of the feature of the toy at the time. So that's what I was thinking, is the size was the part of the gimmick. But that, you know, that's what I was thinking.
So he was the John Holmes of Beast Machines.
I don't get that, and I'm not sure I want to either.
I think it was more the John Hancock of Beast Machines.
Yeah.
So,
why did I buy that toy?
As far as a gimmick for Beast Machines overall, though, I almost want to say the overall gimmick as a whole was going away from anything and everything that we've ever previously associated with the brand, as far as realistic vehicle modes, realistic animal modes. They were trying to go specifically alien, specifically Cybertronian on everything all across the board.
Yeah.
Take, for instance, Tank War right here. This is the Generations Tank War that came out last year.
It's actually quite nice, actually.
I love the figure. I got the cannon for 99 cents with free shipping from China just today. I found this at Goodwill for a quarter. I know, right? Best buck and a half I ever spent. Seriously, though, just take into account, you know, the fact that it's based on Cybertron. You don't have any real major things to scan, you know, and I think it went over real well for what they were trying to do. Not saying it did well in comparison to other lines or other series. But for what it was, I think it was really well done. I mean, you had these vehicle modes, and the Viacon Generals and the drones, they were alien-looking. They looked like alien technology. This doesn't even look like any kind of an H-tank, even, or regular, like Abrams. It was its own thing. Obsidian, you know, was wonderful. It was one of my favorites. The robot modes didn't conform to the regular standard of, you know, a robot mode where he's got to have a specific type of nose and, you know, arm structure. I mean, you had figures like oh, what's a good example? Thrust.
Stryker and
Thrust. He stood on his wheel in the show. Jetstorm, he almost never used that. I don't think they ever used his legs in the show. He just had the vertical thrusters.
Yeah.
On the bottom, you know.
Well, Jim, Stryker would hover on her feet.
Uh-huh.
Well, Jim, let me ask you this. If we had gotten a Botanica toy, would her being a plant-based Transformer have been considered a gimmick since it's so different?
I think so.
It's almost like,
because you look at Beast Changer, which was a Savage Noble toy.
I love that.
And it's just a toy that fits in the line, and they gave it a specific gimmick, which was that middle spark chest thing that didn't work.
Yeah.
So that's the gimmick. I think you're blurring the lines between gimmick and price point and just general design theory.
Yeah. Well, you know, of those three, each one probably shapes the other when you're looking at creating a figure. So there's going to be some blurring there anyway.
Right. Just like with Armada, the gimmick was minicons. You know.
Yeah, and then you had a character like Cyclonus in Armada, who was the only one that you could plug a minicon in and flick the button in the back, and you would make the minicon shoot or the line drop.
Yeah, those were like four. Yeah, though.
Okay, but so
then
yeah,
again,
so
you had Overload, or was it? Yeah, Overload.
Yeah, Overload.
That essentially had a Headmaster gimmick.
Starscream,
that was a great one.
Starscream had Swindle that could connect up under the nose cone and add to the front of the jet.
It also unlocked other like sound features when you did that.
Yeah. You also have the Star Saber like that.
Ah.
Well, that
just absolutely
He went to his drawer and just like, I'm going to grab this many minicons. I just went,
well, okay, well now,
before we get
before we get too far into our Armada, and we're going to finish up Beast Machines,
okay.
we are forgetting one of the most important toy lines with some of the best figures we've ever gotten.
1, 2, 3, Transformers.
Machine Wars doesn't count because Machine Wars was a lot of reissues,
it might count in reverse because all the gimmicks were gutted. All the missile firing, all the sight features, it was all gutted. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a reverse gimmick. Sorry.
Even the transformation of some of the ones, just they're flip changers. That's a gimmick itself.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. But I was talking about
robots in disguise.
Oh. Yes. Oh.
Well, then again, you have the Optimus and the Magnus that actually combine together.
Yep.
And Tan Megatron.
Yeah.
He transformed anywhere from 6 to 15 different things.
Now. Well, you mentioned triple changers back in when we were talking about Generation 1. When did a multiple changer like that was advertised as like a triple changer, six changer, what have you? I think Megatron was the first six changer since
Six Shot.
What, Six Shot? And sure. Technically he had 10 modes, but they just weren't advertised until Devil Gigatron, Galvatron.
Well, wasn't there a mold variation between the U.S. and Japanese releases that actually
I'm not aware.
There is. So, you guys called him Megatron?
This is Galvatron, especially.
Right? It was Megatron for the black one, and the white one was Galvatron.
Right.
Both of them used the same mode when it got to America. Both were using the Devil Gigatron mode, whereas in Japan, if you have Gigatron and Devil Gigatron, Gigatron can't actually do the final four forms because his peg is too large for where it would form the remaining elephant and stuff like that. So you can't actually do it with the Japanese mode.
I thought so.
I was unaware of that.
Yep. Converts from robot to mangled piece of purple crap and back again.
Well, I'm just happy sorry, actually talking about gimmicks from Beast Machines actually. Megatron head mode. You take out all his little spiny legs, you can merge him with Fortress Maximus.
Yes, I love that.
Happy coincidence.
Actually, a gimmick that we, you know, this does go with RID, but also go back to G2. The spy changers were also the size of Hot Wheels, and you could use those on Hot Wheel, like, racetracks and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Rick, didn't the package say on the spy changers compatible with other major brand tracks or something along those lines?
I'm trying to remember that.
Hold on a second. I actually have a packaged spy changer. Let me go grab it.
Okay. Because I thought there was something on the package that made a reference to being compatible with major track sets or something along those lines.
Right then.
I may be misremembering, but.
This would be the same as like getting like the Hotshot and Crosswise or any of that, two packs. But as I'm looking
at this, Hotshot and Rev.
Hotshot and Rev.
It's translucent.
It's
also got the spring-loaded arm.
I'm not seeing anything.
Okay. Maybe I was just misremembering, but I thought it said something about being compatible with other.
I mean, they are, but I'm not seeing it on here.
For some reason, I don't know if it was on that. It might have been because they came on different. It might actually be on the G2 packaging.
That's possible. Okay. Coincidentally, this is the very first Transformer my wife ever bought me. Just throwing that out there.
And another one I want to actually point out about the Spy Changers is they didn't all just come in just a solid color. They came in translucent colors, which I think that was also another gimmick just to re-release. Would you consider that a gimmick?
Maybe.
In itself? It's like a variant kind of thing?
Not sure. But that you're talking about like the universe, like the Family Dollar, Dollar General releases, right?
Mm-hmm.
From like 06.
Well, KB actually had a few that came out that were completely different color, and they were all translucent. I've got the entire line of like all the Spy Changers except for there's a Junsco Toys version. I don't have those yet.
I think I might have the Lucky Draws you don't have.
So
I'll have to send you a PM with it, but I'm pretty sure it's about this long and it's yellow on the front and blue in the back.
A spy changer that's this long?
Mm-hmm. It's more of a vehicle, actually.
I think I know what you're talking about. Is it one of the launching trucks?
One day you're going to have to come over.
One day. You're going to have to.
Speaking of coming over, I'm moving to Massachusetts, so if you want to come over and help me pack.
I'll have to call my boss and see if he'll be okay with that.
But, okay, now let's kind of change gears here. I know we haven't covered
season two.
Yes.
Gears.
Another Transformer pun here. Let's kind of change gears here. I know we haven't covered every year of Transformers, and we really, frankly, don't have the time to cover every year. Let's talk about broad covering gimmicks. I mean, we've talked about specific lines having specific gimmicks and everything. We know that, like Armada, the gimmick was the mini-cons. Mm-hmm. Basically, your toys had all kinds of these little ports to like stick your mini-cons all over them. I have to admit, I always thought it was kind of odd that you'd want to just take little Transformers and stick them all over. It was like bedazzle your Transformers with other.
Yeah.
Yo, dog, I heard you like Transformers, so I figured you'd stick Transformers on your Transformers.
You'd be pimping my Transformer.
Like, yeah.
But, I got all the mini-cons. Great, can you move? No. Yeah.
That would be Megatron. Have you tried putting filling up every single port of his, like, for the mini-cons? It's amazing because you tap him and he just falls over. He can't sustain his. his stability.
This is my question. Which Armada figure has the most mini-cop ports?
Unicron.
Was it Unicron?
I don't know
if it was Unicron or Primus, because Primus has quite a few.
Well, Primus came in a different line.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
And it also depends on if
I just think it's funny how that just, like, that whole Mini-Con thing just transitioned from one line into another, and now even Generations figures.
And that can even vary on how many versions or how many repeats of the skateboard you use, because then you can just perpetually add Mini-Cons forever.
Mm. Oh, going back to real quick to a topic that you were talking about, Don, the G2 packaging for GoBots advertised high-speed racing axles on the card. Credit to Jason Tate for that.
Okay, all right, cool.
I thought I saw it written on there somewhere at one time.
Yeah.
I must have been a reference.
But, you know, Armada had the mini-cons where you could, like, plug, you know, all kinds of mini cons and small transformers all over it. I have to admit, back in the day, it was really difficult for me to latch on board with that gimmick. I like the mini cons themselves, much in the same way I love MicroMasters. You know, you just got little tiny transformers, and I love that. But honestly, whenever I displayed them, back in the early 2000s, whenever they were out, I mainly displayed them by themselves, or if like Star Saber, this is the only time I would combine them together and interact them with larger transformers. Mm-hmm. I just didn't care about the bedazzled jewelry aspect of the mini cons. So, although that was the main selling point.
Got to catch them all.
Yeah. Well, one of the main selling points for Armada Prime was the simple fact he had all the crazy electronics. Like, as you're transforming him, the trailer would transform.
Now that super base
transforming prime, pants.
And now that same super base prime turns into glitter whenever you try to transform it.
That was a great gimmick, but it just never. Because if it was a great gimmick in execution, we would have seen it again by now in some fashion. But it was a really interesting thing. I remember the BotCon when they came out, a guy had that Armada Prime out in the lobby, and he was just transforming it back and forth by chunking the Prime in different locations. We were like,
I absolutely loved the cab on Armada Super Base Prime.
Yeah.
But as a combined trailer form, the combined robot mode, I absolutely hated that. Hated it.
It was
too much packed into one toy. It's like it was overly ambitious. I mean, if you just had that awesome cab, I love the way it transformed. It was a great figure by itself. And just have the trailer split open and become a base like G1 Prime. It didn't have to look like the G1 Prime. I'm not saying that, but have it become some kind of like gun platform or something other.
But then you got Jetfire that becomes a pair of pants for him.
The whole auto-transforming gimmick, that did not work for me at all. I hated that toy. And it just never stayed together for me.
Yeah. But you know what's weird, Jordan, is you reminded me. It's been bugging me for weeks. That new Robots in Disguise Japanese Adventures figure, the leader class Optimus, you finally reminded me who that reminds me of. Super Pants Prime. Because he has the big long legs in the A stance, and he has the nice upper body, but he's all just legs.
Yeah.
So thank you, because that's been bugging me for weeks on who he reminds me of.
Wait, are we talking about TAV-21?
Yeah. The visual
possible,
look.
Yeah,
I know, but I'm just saying the visual look at him reminds me a lot of Super Pants Prime.
Those legs go all the way up.
Talking about Optimus, do you prefer the Armada Optimus to the Power Rangers Optimus from Energon?
I prefer Fire Convoy, the best Optimus outside Masterpieces.
I actually didn't.
I have to agree with you.
I like the Cybertron Prime.
I didn't mind the Energon one. And I don't recall where I heard this. So, I mean, chalk this up to he tell me, unless somebody can Google it. But if I recall, I want to say the Energon Prime was designed specifically as an homage to Super Sentai and, you know, by extension, Power Rangers, intentionally. The way I understood it was someone who was influential in Super Sentai had, I guess, passed away, and they designed that Optimus as kind of a tribute to him.
Well, I also caught wind during the whole time that came out was the simple fact that they were trying to compete with Power Rangers with that directly, just because of the gimmick.
Yeah, and what? Because from what I remember, I think it was Hasbro who led the design on those three series. So I think the designs would have come first from Hasbro and then went to Takara. So it wouldn't make sense for Hasbro to pay homage or respect to someone from Super Sentai.
Didn't Aaron have a lot to do with the design of that Prime?
Yeah, he did. He did. And I remember him telling me the original trailer was very different. I think the trailer actually stood up and became more of a base for the figures to deploy from. And then Budget Cuts eventually brought it back to where the doors just come open and they just slide out.
I hear Matthew.
But yeah, they were trying to compete with Power Rangers, so it would make sense that if they're going to do something like Power Rangers, they do it with the one of the most popular characters at the biggest price point that can support that, which is Optimus.
Yeah.
That's the big story I heard with that one was the simple fact they're trying to directly, you know, compete with Power Rangers and Bandai.
So. I remember something a few years back. Well, it was during Energon, whenever Insane Galvatron and I were talking about that Optimus Prime. He was either referred to as Fatimus Prime or Go-Go Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
Go-Go Optimus Prime.
I want to say one thing about that, though, that's always bothered me is the Fatimus Prime label. Because, I mean, if you look at it and look at the molding, the figure doesn't actually have a gut. It's just it's more the boxy proportion that lends itself to that. But the biggest part of that was the way the wheel wells are on the hips, which is not dissimilar from G1 Prime, by the way. But the way they hang off like that, it kind of gives that appearance because you've got the fender that goes over the top of them, and it gives kind of a rounded appearance.
Round. Yeah, he's very round.
Yeah, it's those fenders, I think, is the main thing.
With the chicken leg underneath. I mean, he looks like your stereotypical beer gut guy from the South, you know, with the little chicken legs and the big old beer gut, kind of like how I'm built.
I don't know. I think it looks more like something out of Looney Tunes where a character's hiding in the box and they just the legs come out the bottom and they just kind of walk. So it's like a walking box.
Yeah.
But think about it, though. On a design level, if you knew that he was going to be combining with all these other components, you want to try to keep him in some kind of scale to look normal once he's merged with everything else. I guess that kind of made up for the fact that he had tiny arms and...
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
They're still competing with Power Rangers. That's all now,
around that time, too, didn't Power Rangers have a semi that was like part dinosaur or something? Wasn't that around the same time?
No.
That's a whole line of toys I never got into.
That was later. That was much later.
Was it? Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. And that was later.
Yeah, that thing was just hideous looking. I'm sorry. But anyway.
Now, the thing is, I want to talk about something that is a little more broad spectrum and less line specific, like the Minicons and stuff like that. In general... you had light piping, which we talked about earlier. We had
light piping.
Yes. We had light piping. What about lights and sounds gimmicks? I think this is one of the most often hated on gimmicks. And I'll be honest, there are some Transformers absolutely would be a fantastic toy if it weren't for the damn electronic sounds and lights and sounds.
Revenge of the Fallen Optimus Prime.
Every 2 seconds, you put that toy down. he says mm-hmm. something. And it's yeah. cool to have Peter Cullen's voice in the toy, but every 2 seconds you put that thing down. It's just like Armada Jetfire, that gun.
I was going to say.
Put that gun, yeah, you put that gun anywhere in like a bag or anything.
I was going to say, never move from one city to another city with a long road trip and have Armada Jetfire in a box in the bottom floorboard in the back seat.
I will remember that when I move.
Silver Bolt, the leader class Silver Bolt with the machine gun noise when you press a button from the top into the
ground.
Yes. Who got that figure?
Yes.
It was. You're not wrong about the moving. That made a mistake. Yeah. I had the box in my car, and every time I shifted, oh, crap, what is that? Where's the coming out?
I had a lot worse problem with Power Glide than I did Silver Bolt. Yeah.
Wait, what was Power Glide?
Power Glide had
Didn't he have the Millennium Falcon noises?
Well, yeah, he had like a swooping sounds and stuff. Yeah. But
one of the best like lights and sound thing. I know some people's gonna hate on me about this, but G2 Prime.
That is a good example.
I love that one. I'm sorry. I like the sounds, and it made freaking like the semi truck noise. It was great. And then the Laser Prime right after that.
Yeah, Laser Prime's a good example of it. And I'll tell you another good example of lights and sound that does not impede transformation or anything like that. And it's standing right here. Metroplex.
I thought you were going to say Devastator.
No.
He's standing right here. He's putting the blank spot on the wall.
He's got lights. He's got sounds and everything. And he is in no way impeded by that gimmick. And to me, that is a good use of that. I don't mind lights and sound as long as it doesn't impede the transformation, doesn't impede the looks of the toy or the stability of the toy. A good example of bad stability caused from it is the original Armada Starscream Seeker mold. That voice box or that sound box that was on the mm-hmm. back between the afterburners,
right.
If it would have been able to fold down, it would have had the stability of this toy similar. As it was, it was very back heavy.
That's so funny. I don't know if you had that issue. I actually had the Skywarp version of that. I never had any problems with falling over.
There's heels that flip out, right?
There's that flip out. It never fell over.
Yeah, it would. But
I'm trying to think. I don't kick my tables or my shelves.
Jason Tate says he hates lights and sounds unless that sound is the transformation sound. Now, that's another thing. How many Transformers that have the sound gimmick actually have the G1 transforming sound? Can we name them all? I mean, I know there's
nobody in G1.
No.
Armada Overload.
Armada Overload had it.
The Fallen Optimist, didn't you have it?
Silverbolt from Universe, I think.
Animated... Ultra Magnus and the Roadbuster. That one, I'm sorry. It makes the transformation noise. Yeah. It is so freaking awesome. I was like, that's what made that toy the best thing ever. I'm sorry.
Throw it alone, Edge, man.
2007 role play Optimus Prime helmet. It counts.
I never opened mine. I've got like six of those, and I never
sound is the gimmick
itself. Wait, doesn't the Bumblebee, like, gun thing do the same thing?
I think so. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Now, it's kind of weird you bring that up, because a couple years ago, I was talking to the guys at Hasbro at BotCon, and I asked them, and I don't remember what toy, it was that exact reason. The toy at the time had the transformation sound. It might have been Magnus. And I asked them, the problem is with the chip in these toys, the transformation sound is either way too short for the toy you're transforming, mm-hmm. or it's like pitched wrong. It's like really high.
Oh, come on, Don, quit nitpicking it.
Oh no. I was explaining to him the different things. You know, if you're transforming, for generally the way it used to be, if you're transforming from robot to vehicle mode, the pitch went down. Mm-hmm. If you went vehicle to robot, the pitch went up.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I was just saying that would it cost that much more to have longer transformation sound? So while you're transforming the toy, you have the sound. And they told us they have to buy these chips in certain storage capacities. And it's either that short or a whole lot longer, which costs more to record more sounds.
There was a figure that I had recently. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it actually did that. It when it went to vehicle mode, it transformed down in the sound, and then robot mode went up.
But this was
that was though.
I'm trying to remember what that is too. That's very
That sounds familiar.
That's a recent one.
But you know, back when I asked them, this was earlier in the life cycle of the figure. But again, that's why I asked them that, because the transformation sound is like a 3-second clip or 4-second clip. And you got this big figure, and it's like you're done. But that was their reason.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Whenever they had the Nerf gun that came out, that was a locked gun, didn't the Megatron sword make the transformation noise when you, like,
yeah, explode? I have that sword, but I don't know where it's at.
This is movie stuff. This is pre-movie. This is
Armada, right? Or Energon. It was Energon.
Energon, yeah. I know it was one of those.
You know, I've got the sword, not the gun.
Now, since we're kind of on the topic right now, and it is part of the game.
Is it Power Glide? I believe, did make that sound.
Power Glide.
I remember that because Theo did a review, and it was like he did the it was like a repaint. It wasn't that one. It was like the black one or something like that, because you know he's all about black and purple. So, yeah, he was doing that, and just like, it makes the noise. It's you, man. Come on.
Yeah, Jason Tate also says one of those simple flip changers they make now could possibly be timed to change at the same rate as the transforming sound. That would be sweet. You know what I mean? It's like it's little, just flip changes, but that would be so cool.
One step Grimlock, seriously. When they decided to release that toy, they could have easily incorporated that noise when you do that.
Was that the $80 Grimlock?
Yeah, the big one, the oversized, gigantic thing that actually already had electronic gimmicks in it. So it's like, why doesn't it make an electronic?
Well, you know, while we're on the subject of the transforming sound, and it is relevant because it is kind of a gimmick of the Transformers. What exactly is Hasbro's stance on that transforming sound? I mean, originally it was a hallmark. I mean, even now, older people like us, whenever you hear that transforming sound, eyes light up and go, ooh, that's the transforming sound from that Transformer show years and years ago. Why did they move away from that? Any insight on that, Rick?
I don't know.
You're talking more about a show thing rather than a toy thing. Hmm. So,
well, seeing as how it's, I mean, we have some toys with that sound in it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that was one of the things whenever I was a kid and I would play with my G1 Transformers, and I would almost guarantee each and every one of you too did the same thing. You're sitting there, we've all got that tick, tick, tick.
It really comes down to personal interest. I can tell you with the shows, the films, it comes down to everyone who's in that creative position wants to make it their own and make it unique to them, which is why characters change, colors change, alt modes change, voice actors change. It's a little harder to speak on that part to the toys because I wasn't involved with any toys that had that feature in it.
I almost wonder if maybe they might be transitioning away from it in some capacity. Because it does kind of have a kind of an old school sound to it. Anytime we've heard it in some more recent series, it has been similar of a sound. But it sounded more modern, more.
Added like an echo or something, or they just kind of extend it with like some kind of servo noises or something.
Yeah, I mean it sounds smoother. You know, you hear more metallic noises than you do more static clunky sounds.
Yeah,
and that's the influence of the films on that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Now,
Prime, like Transformers Prime, was a perfect example of that.
Yes.
How often did you hear it? Like, it might be like a quick, like, you know, transformation sound, but there was like some kind of something added to it, like every time almost.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, we've talked about many, many gimmicks, and I'm sure there are some that we missed because, well, we've only got about a two-and-a-half-hour show. So it's impossible to cover them all in one, but there's a lot of stuff that we've touched on. And I want to go to each one of us before we move on to our final topic here. I want to give Rick a chance to talk about Jetstrike here momentarily. But I want to ask each one of everybody on the show tonight, and then I also want to ask you, the listener, what's your favorite and least favorite, just one, gimmick that has been used in Transformers? I want to listen all the listeners that, if you're listening, tweet us at TFYLP and tell us what your favorite and least favorite gimmicks in the Transformers franchise history are. Don, since you're first on my screen, I'll ask you, what's your favorite and least favorite?
I guess my favorite would be, it's the low-hanging fruit, but it would be combining. Just because we've gotten so many good teams and so many great characters from the concept, it would have to be combining, I think, is my favorite gimmick. Least favorite would be Mini-Cons, because they ruined a lot of good toys to incorporate a gimmick that usually didn't do much on its own.
I love the Mini-Cons by themselves, but you know, I gotta disagree with you on the Mini-Cons, but I mean I do see your point. Rick, how about you?
Favorite, you know, combining is always gonna be one of the things I love the most. But I definitely have a gimmick that I hate and I've always hated, and that's the Pretenders. I mean, literally, you pop this guy's belt off. It's a shell. That's all it is.
Shellformers.
It's a shell. There is zero play value to this.
I disagree. I love the play value to this.
I love the designs. But
you love the designs, you love the characters, but it could have been executed way better than it was.
It could be done better, and I hope there's someone out there who can do it better one day.
I believe there is.
Yeah, because then we'd be able to play with this too.
Yeah. Jim, how about you?
Well, as far as my favorite, as well as my most, or rather least liked, I don't want to say hate because I love this brand. I always have, but I can't bring myself to use the term hate in that context. They're both
general.
They are both the same gimmick, oddly enough. My favorite gimmick is, like Don said, the combination, combining with other figures to make larger, more powerful forms, weapons, what have you. That includes, you know, the combiners, the Mini-Cons, Energon shirt and pants modes, Landcross. The possibilities of that are so limitless. Landcross alone, if you factor in all the weapons and assault modes, you know, duplicates and whatnot, you can build up to 73 different alternate configurations with the multi-force. I've counted. I had a little chart with the
37. Not
73. Like I said, if you count the duplicates, like if you have two of Waver or two of Dash, one with the gun, one without the gun. Anyway, I was picking nits with that one. However, my least favorite, and this might make some folks mad, so I apologize. My least favorite is, oddly enough, the Scramble City style, simply because it is so overused. Don't get me wrong. I love the ability to alternate
arms with legs and right with left and all this, that, and the other. That's phenomenal. That adds so much play value, but it has been so overused that seems to be the only thing that people think of when they think combiner. What about Rail Racer, Build King, Landfill?
Yeah.
That was an amazing combination. You had the upper torso or either leg in a three-way combination style. And
I love that animation.
You also had because I'm not the expert here with Beast Wars, but you also have those.
Tripredicus.
Well.
Yeah, Tripredicus, Magnaboss, what was it?
The Magmatron.
Magmatron.
Trainboss.
JRX, Raiden even, and Devastator, the original Devastator. Granted, he had a purple plate for thighs, but still.
Road Caesar.
Yes, where he had a transformer as each leg, and the third guy all formed the rest of the bot. But even so, there are so many varying ways you can combine these. Even Armada Perceptor. I mean, just ingenious ways and ideas that are being underutilized in favor of just the generic, I'll form an arm, I'll form a leg, I'll be the torso. So that's I guess we can say what grinds my gears about that. But.
What about you?
Sweet.
I guess favorite is a toss up between Action Masters and Micromasters.
Woohoo!
Micromasters because I really love the whole having a playset, like a city for the Transformers to be in. But you couldn't do that with anything pre-Micromaster, just because, like, Metroplex is about the same height as one of the combiners.
Mm-hmm.
So that was never going to work. But with the Micromasters, I could do that. I could have the rocket base. I could have the little bases. That'd be perfect. And Action Masters is more in scale as well with that. And they have their own bases and vehicles that transform into something like bases. And that works out really well. So I guess I really like that tail end of that period, and I kind of wish I bought more of it. Most hated, does lights and sounds count as the gimmick to most hate? Because that's what I really, really hate. I hate having batteries in my Transformers. I hate forgetting that the batteries are in my Transformers and then they corrode the electronics.
Yes.
You know, that's an interesting thing. Whenever I still had my G1 Shockwave, I got it out of storage. I hadn't played with it. Let's see here. I got it in, when did Shockwave come out? Was it 86?
85.
85. Okay, so I got it in 85, and I never touched that toy again. I played with it up until probably 88, 89. Yeah, I think 89 is when I put my Transformers away, because once it started getting into the Action Masters and stuff, I just lost all interest. And I put them in storage, but as a kid, I had no wherewithal, no forethought. Hey, I better take the batteries out of this damn thing. Okay, fast forward to an adult. My mom and dad had found my collection, brought the collection up from back from Florida whenever they moved back, and it was in a big old box. Okay, I'm taking my whole collection out of this box. I find my G1 Shockwave. This is late 99 or so. Fox Kids repaints Beast Wars are on the shelf. Beast Machines are starting to trickle in. Yes. And I'm rediscovering my collection. Find that G1 Shockwave. Put the end back on the thing and pull the trigger. This is 1999, so 11 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, still worked. Still worked, same battery and everything. Had not corroded. I took it out eventually. But I'm like, the same, I think it was like a 9-volt that was in there, from whenever I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it shocked the living hell out of me. And the first time I owned an Omega Supreme, I bought it at a comic shop in Lexington, A-Plus Comics. I bought it there, and the guy had just got it in, hadn't even had it in the display case. I came in and he said, "Hey, I got something for you. I want you to look at it." And it was Omega Supreme. I transformed it, put him in his base mode, turned the button on because it looked like the batteries were in there. And the batteries have been in there since 85, 86, and he still went on around the track. He made a full revolution around the track on his original batteries. That just blew my mind.
They just don't make them like that anymore.
They sure don't.
I have to ask, in the Shockwave and in the Omega Supreme, do you happen to recall, it might be a little petty, but do you recall the brand of the batteries that were used?
I want to say they're just Duracells.
No, I wouldn't have been surprised if they were ever ready, because back then the whole like silver thing with the black cat going through stuff was like a big thing for the 80s.
I'm
pretty sure that the one that I had in my Shockwave was a Duracell, though.
Okay.
Because I distinctly remember a Duracell. Mm-hmm. Now, the Omega Supreme might have been an Ever Ready. I'm not sure. But all right, Jason, how about you?
Me? The gimmick guy? Oh, good Lord.
You only got to pick one.
I know, right? I'll be honest with you. Lights and Sounds, I think, is probably my favorite, because it, like we were talking about, like with Shockwave, I mean, you had Galvatron that did the same thing with all the noises and stuff, with like the gun modes and such. But Omega Supreme, when I was a kid, I had one. I had Omega Supreme. I think that was probably my third Transformer I got. And I loved it because it was a gigantic base with a moving tank, and then you could put it in a mode and make it walk. And its eye lit up and everything. I was like, that just blew my mind, because it was like the coolest thing in the world when I was a kid. And really, that's why I think G2 is kind of like my baby now, because I love it. things I hate. Spring-loaded, like, auto motors. Those things drive me nuts, because sometimes it hampers the way a toy can transform.
Beast if you don't have it, claw.
there's so many of them in the line that if the spring didn't hold up right, it wouldn't transform correctly.
Or Beast Force Power Claw really comes to mind. I love that toy, but that damn claw with that spring loaded thing hardly will stay in there. I mean, you got to get it in there just right. But if you barely bump that sucker, out it comes. It's like,
right. I love the missile launching gimmicks. But when you go in and you're putting together your Devastator, and you barely bump a shelf and it shoots his freaking fist off, it's like, it drives you nuts, because it's like, why didn't it not lock in right? You know. But I mean, I see where the spring loaded gimmick is helpful. But usually when it comes into like when you're transforming it and there's like an automorph or something, and it doesn't want to work right, or say it works too hard, because remember that one Prime that, I don't know if you guys watched Bolt Matrix, but he hit the button and it springs up, you know, that Prime's head, and his head just literally launched off the body.
Is that the movie?
I mean, seriously. Spring-loaded gimmicks are cool, but if you're going to have a head launch off an Optimus, please give me a missile that can fire clear across the room. Now, and another thing a lot of people don't think about when it comes to spring-loaded gimmicks is the rollback, the pullback cars that you let go.
Mm-hmm.
So annoying when you get one of those, it doesn't work. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I've got all the European-powered Masters. You guys remember all of those?
Mm-hmm.
Like Stax and Mean Streak and those. Those are great when they work. I've seen them where they don't, and it's like, the thing away, it just sucks. I don't know. It's a spring-loaded gimmicks kind of drive me a bit crazy.
Yeah, my favorites. A lot of people may be surprised. I love Headmasters. That's probably my second favorite, honestly. But honestly, my very favorite is Light Piping. And this generation's Armada Starscream is a great example of that. I mean, if you get just the right lighting on that, it looks like this toy is alive with the glow in the eyes. And it just fires the imagination in me, and I love it. Absolutely love Light Piping. It irritates the hell out of me whenever we have Light Piping on a toy and it's either obscured by something behind the head, or or the eyes are freaking painted over. It's like, why the hell have it then, you know?
Or you got something as awesome as this thing, and where's the Light Piping?
I mean, come on. This thing is phenomenal, and you tell me that wouldn't be awesome if that head didn't have – I mean, if that thing had light
– it would have been an extra part. Couldn't do it.
Seriously.
No, seriously, it's great without lead piping. I don't know why you guys talk about later on, good light piping is.
Yeah, I love light piping. Now, my least favorite gimmick is from the current line, and this kind of goes back to what Rick and I were talking about pre-show, is from the current line. This little scan thing, it's kind of okay. It's neat. Right now, here in 2015, that's nice. You know, being able to scan that thing and play that character in a toy or in a game, rather. But 15, 20 years from now, that little scan thing is just going to be a round, flat eyesore on this toy. And I'm like, it's not going to amount to a damn hill of beans. And the thing is, and I know that it's not really a consideration whenever you release toys here in the U.S., but this, the Transformers Adventure Gregavor, okay, that scan bar on there, I don't think that works in the U.S. market because it's got different colors on it and everything.
It doesn't. There's a Prime that's come out that's like a large one. It's really, really, really big. I can't remember.
GAV-21.
That one.
Yeah.
The great thing about that one, it's actually got like a wheel on his shoulder so you can actually switch it. And it's got two of the scan things. They don't work here in the States. But it also will switch over to a regular Autobot logo so it actually hides itself. So
now, I mean,
they implemented something like that on those guys?
I've got a caveat. I think the concept is sound. You know, you buy a new toy and you unlock the playability of that character in the game. I think it's really neat. However, however, I don't want it on the toy itself. You know, give me a freaking tech spec. That's another gimmick that is a lost art. A flipping tech spec. I don't care how it's shaped. I love the original long tech specs that was on the G1 toys. But the flipping tech spec.
Piece of plastic put over it.
Because so many toys today are based on characters that do not have a characterization in the comic book or the cartoon. Back in Generation 1, there was a lot of characters like that. Like poor little Weird Wolf here. He barely had any characterization in the American cartoon. I mean, I think Monzo spoke like one line. Weird Wolf himself had none. You know, so the only characterization you really had with him beyond the Headmaster comics from Marvel was the tech specs. And that is a lost art. Transformers need to have tech specs. And if... like these RID 2015 figures, put some kind of scannable QR code in the tech spec. You know, it's not going to kill anything. It's and after it goes by the wayside 5, 10, 15 years from now, you're not going to care if it's making an eyesore on the toy. I mean, you don't have this big flat spot with a fadeable sticker on it. It's just a little minor pet peeve of mine.
Honestly, I would like to see maybe – because I know Repro Labels actually makes stuff for some of those figures, but why can't Repro Labels possibly make like a specialized sticker that could go over that?
Okay.
Like make it silver.
Yeah.
Like a big silver thing with like a big Autobot logo or Decepticon logo, and that would fix most of that problem. Yeah. If they really would just release like a whole sheet of those things you can buy.
Yeah.
You mean like rub symbols?
Wait.
Or a rub sign, yes, please. That would be sick.
Okay.
Like a little round rub sign.
They already make.
All right.
They make round ones?
Rick, while you still got battery life here, let's talk a little bit about Jet Strike. I know we've been going a little bit long here, but this was a big topic. Let me share this real quick here.
Cool.
Wow.
And he just fell off.
Oh, no.
Dark crap.
That's what we get for going long.
Yeah.
Damn. Well,
We will do more. We will do it first thing next episode. Well, I'll have Michael and crew because I'll be in Kansas at TF Expo.
We love you, Rick.
Sorry about that, man.
Well, before we sign off, listener Jason Tate, he's got his 2 cents in on the thing. His favorite is Headmasters, even though the combining is a close second. He dislikes Minicons who activate features. Minicons on their own are fine, but he just dislikes the ones that activate features. Headmasters win because you have an interactive play pattern where the alt modes and bases can now be used with the smaller figures. It gives the bots a sense of scale like they are truly giant robots. And I totally agree with that. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening. We've went 2.5 hours tonight on a huge topic. There's a lot more we could talk about. But we want to hear what your favorites and least favorite gimmicks are. Let's talk about them on Twitter. Tweet us at TFYLP. What are your favorite and least favorite gimmicks in Transformers? We may mention them again here on the show. Check out Play With This 2's Twitter account at Play With This 2. Yesterday, there was a picture posted of Jetstrike. Apologize, we didn't get to this sooner. But Jetstrike was the prototype was unveiled and or the renders, and it looks really, really awesome. We'll talk about that in an upcoming episode, if not next episode, very, very soon. But guys, y'all have anything left that is really pressing?
G2's awesome. Sorry.
Yeah. G2 blinds people.
That's the point.
No, actually, if you want to go worse than G2, get Great Goldoran and send him in the sun.
There's nothing wrong with Great Goldoran. There is nothing wrong with it.
No, I'm talking about on sheer blinding
level. Worse, you go for those two. What was it? The Optimus and Bumblebee that's coming out as the My Little Ponies.
Oh, don't worry.
Why do you tell us things like this? Seriously.
No, Hasbro just made those to celebrate Friendship Day. They're not actually
because it's all magic, right?
Friendship Day, we need My Little Pony Creo.
I had to bring that up.
Mondoran,
you know you want to stockpile those.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that'll wrap it up for this episode. Don't forget, September 4th, mark your calendars, we'll have the incomparable Paul Eiding on the show, voice of Generation 1's Perceptor, Najika, I believe, in the face of Najika in Generation 1. He's the voice of Grandpa Max and Ben 10, Colonel Campbell in the Metal Gear Solid series. As well as he was Ambassador Loquel in the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation entitled Liaisons. Check that out. He was really awesome. It'll be great to have him on the show. If you're a listener of the audio version of this show, he does the voiceover. He truly is. The Perceptor in the intro for this show actually is Perceptor. It's Paul Eiding. And he voices our outro as well.
And I perceive this will be a great show.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it will be a great show. Next week, it'll be our other cast headed up by Michael Swift, a.k.a. Sideburn 2. I'm not exactly sure what we'll be going to be covering that particular episode. So watch our Facebook group and our Twitter feed for information on that. As well as subscribe to us on YouTube and on iTunes and tell us how you feel about the show. Tell us how you like about it, what you don't like about it. We'll take those things to heart and kind of adapt and see where it goes. Also, I will not be here next week, obviously, because we've kind of gone to a split crew schedule. So it'll be hosted by Sideburn 2, But I may drop in because I will actually be at TF Expo in Wichita, Kansas. If you listened to the episode last week with Phil Searle, find that out. Listen to episode 162. It's a great listen. He tells you all you need to know about TF Expo coming up next weekend. Really excited to see that. I really want to try to get Mr. Gilvezan, voice of G1 Bumblebee. I'd like to sit down and talk with him, as well as Buzz Dixon and Matt Frank, who are going to be in attendance there. If I can try to get something for TFYLP recorded, that would be great. We'll see. If you're attending that show, look me up. I'll be at the Capture Prey booth most of the time, I'm sure. Stop by and say hi and let me know what you think of the show. Well, guys, we'll see you next time on Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. I am Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf, with Headmaster Don, Jim Black, Hang Up Chan, and Plasticon, and the recently logged off Rick Alvarez because his laptop battery died. We do go long.
That's what she said.
Yes, go long.
Go long or go home.
Hey, it's almost football season, so we go long. So, guys, we'll see you next time on Transformers for Listening Pleasure. Thanks for listening.
Take care, everybody.
Don't forget to watch Beast Machine. Peace
out. See you guys.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Eiding, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.